The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Mike Consul. Joining me by phone from Manhattan, hotel capital of the world. Let's say that for now, and he can correct me if there's a more robust market for the hotel business, is Michael Beckman. He is managing director of Townhouse Partners, a due diligence firm focused on the U.S. commercial real estate industry. He's joining me to discuss the hotel industry and the situation we're facing right now because of the COVID-19 pandemic, which has really slammed the hospitality business overall. Michael Beckman, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Mike. Happy to be here and appreciate the opportunity to come on.
So what about that? New York City, hotel capital of the world, or is there a bigger market anywhere in the world for hotels?
I don't think I would disagree with you. Kind of across the spectrum of hotel categories, I think we've got them all covered, and I would say that we're certainly one of the lead indicators of the state of the hotel market.
So let's set the backdrop here. The hotel business, the fundamentals for the hotel business here in the United States and maybe worldwide, but certainly here in the United States, had never been better. They were booming, and this is despite the fact that Airbnb was booming. Airbnb was doing great, and which was seen as a threat to the hotel business at one point, but then all of a sudden people started to realize, look, we've never done better despite Airbnb, so there's room for both of us. Let's not get all sweaty about this. But then we had a reason to get sweaty. Here comes COVID-19, and the statistic I heard, Michael, was that 75% of hospitality business, I don't know if this is hotels or cruise lines or everything, but I heard the figure 75% loss of business. And but we're going to focus just on the hotel business, so we're not going to get into restaurants and cruise lines and all that. You tell me, what is the situation with the hotel business in the United States?
I mean, that's an alarming number. I'm not surprised. I mean, I think if you think about the fact that, A, we had to come to a standstill, it obviously differed from state to state, but more or less everybody came to about a 90-day halt and then some. And then as we start to approach some form of new normal, you know, and kind of speaking across all hospitality, and then I'll drill down on hotels, you know, to what level of occupancy, how many tables in restaurants, and I guess this does still speak to hotels because of, you know, the hotels with restaurants and bars and clubs. I mean, to what degree can we start to get inside of those things? I mean, most everyone's doing outdoor seating only, and maybe some limited indoor. And at what point can any of those businesses start to achieve greater than 40, 50, 60%? And, you know, that's kind of the state of it. I think you've still got quite a few hotels still closed. At this point, I think owners and operators are doing the analysis of, is it better just to close and not lose so much operating expense until the market stabilizes and comes back? What are new occupancies that are palatable to both the folks that stay and the operators, and of course the deal makers out there, the direct investors and the lenders. I think, do you want to kind of speak to recovery and kind of break it down to different categories? What comes back first?
Well, yeah. Now, let me ask you this. What's the answer to what you had just posed? Because how many, this is probably an impossible question for you, but if so, say so. I'm just curious how many have just decided we're better off just shuttering the place temporarily and sucking up the losses versus amplifying them by continuing to run the place by having occupancy so right. low that we're just gushing red ink.
It's a great question. I don't know the answer. Yeah, that would require a bit of research on our part. I'm sure it's very different from market to market. You know, I think the leisure, which we certainly believe comes back first, they're open. You know, they're starting to open. You start to head out of New York City, go out to Long Island, go to the Hamptons. Those hotels are open, and they're trying to figure this thing out, and people are certainly favoring the hotels that, you know, have rooms that have their own exits, don't share too many common spaces, don't have elevators so much, you know, running their restaurants with outdoor seating. But there is a pent-up aggression to get out and stay in these places. And that's why
leisure is coming back first. I mean, because it's almost like leisure obviously is optional. You can decide, yeah. Well, I'm not going to travel right now. Business, to some degree, business, you could say, is a requirement. We've got to get some business done here. So business travel, it almost seems like, would be the first to come back or the most sustainable. But why is so people are just deciding, look, I'm not going to live the rest of my life in a room. So I'm going to get out and I'm going to go do things. Is that people are just have a insouciant attitude about the whole thing?
I think you've been holed up for a few months and you're looking to get out and you're trying to figure out what your risk tolerance is. Some people are stepping out. And on the flip side, you mentioned that you would think that, you know, business would come back first, but I think we've just gone through a 3 or 4 month proof of concept that we can significantly reduce business travel. And it's these hotels that are starting to hit special servicing that rely on conferences and business travel. I'm not going anywhere for business anytime soon. You know, we have a large conference coming up towards the end of the year. I guess it's coming up in January. But it's kind of, you know, it's kind of challenging if you think about it. That's a networking conference. And, mm-hmm. We're all going to be walking around and masks.
Breathing on one another and shaking.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, folks probably aren't going to go. Whereas I've got a family here in a Manhattan apartment. We've got, you know, a 3-year-old and a 1-month-old. As soon as that little guy is able to travel, we're dying to get out. And we'll go somewhere where we're safe, you know, where we feel safe and, a wide open space. And I think that's kind of interesting that you brought up the Airbnb model, because I think there's an approach that some of these private equity firms may take and I think might begin to take, and even some of the hotel players, is to start looking for large swaths of those single-family homes, single-family rental homes, and actually start to play in that Airbnb model space. I mean,
you mean the hotel people or private equity people?
I think maybe both. They've got economies of scale. So they can go get a ton of single-family homes, reduce operating costs, and run those things like an Airbnb. That's great. I could rent a home. I could drive out there. I don't have to see anybody. I don't share any hallways or elevators. I don't have room service coming in and out. There might be a demand for that.
I think the last time we spoke, Michael, you had one of the things that piqued my interest was you had said that Airbnb seems to be the coming back a little bit. I may have you mixed up with somebody else, but you were, I think, indicating. In fact, my wife and I are staying at Airbnb the next 3 nights, not tonight, but the next 3 nights. And it is, you feel so much safer in that situation because it's isolated. You don't have anybody next door. So is that, did I quote you correctly on that or paraphrase you correctly that Airbnb probably is going to come back quicker than a hotel?
It's a little anecdotal, but yes. So, we spent some time reaching out to our residential contacts, those leasing folks, just to kind of get a sense of the market. It's tough to get your hands on an Airbnb around here. And I thought one of the more compelling anecdotes was that they just didn't see any cancellations throughout this. Even, March, April, May, it wasn't like people were canceling and staying home. Everyone was looking forward to getting out. And obviously, there was a bit of an exodus from a New York City, so that could kind of explain that. But, yeah, no cancellations, ton of pent-up demand. I think that market stays strong.
So let me ask you this. What about what is the empty middle seat on airlines, right? Although they're not all doing that. I guess Americans said, no, we're going to fill all the seats now. But airlines are saying middle seat will be empty, give you a little space to make you a little safer. What's the equivalent in hotels? Are they doing every other room?
That's a good question. I haven't necessarily heard about them spacing out. We're catching up a little bit here and there on adaptations, and a lot of it's revolving more around prop tech, virtual check-in, keyless entry. I know there are some flags out there that are requiring at least, one night to air out and to disinfect the room. Yeah, sanitize the room, and then they'll actually put one of those seals on the outside of the door. You're starting to see some things like that so that you can actually have the confidence that it got done and nobody else has been in since. So I think you're starting to see a little bit of, some adaptations in that way.
What kind of occupancy? What kind of occupancy? Hotels need to run 80%+ occupancy to be solvent, or is it 70? I realize it will vary, but right now they're at a very low occupancy rate, is my understanding. What typically a hotel has to run roughly where, in the 80s or 90, in the 80 or 90% occupancy rate?
I mean, it certainly depends on the market and and their penetration rate and the number of rooms in that market, but I think rule of thumb, you want to be around 85 to be called stable. 85 or up. I mean, was your question going to be around what kind of occupancies do you think we'll see over the next, call it 6, 12, 18 months?
Yeah, well, if you could answer that, I don't know, do you know where they are now and how, what kind of, I suppose it's impossible to talk about a timeline for recovery given that we don't know what the virus is going to do, but where are we at right now?
That's a good question too, and I just don't have that information in front of me. That could be an interesting follow-up. I could drill down a little bit more on the data, but it's
Do you expect low. There to be a shakeout? Do you expect there to be a shakeout? Are we going to see hotels? Some cities are talking about 40% of the restaurants going out of business, never reopening. I have a hard time believing there could be that percentage of hotels going out of business, but are we going to see a shakeout or consolidation? I realize I'm asking you to prognosticate now because nobody really knows the answer, but what do you say?
I think there is. There's some form of shakeout. There will be, as far as, the owners go, there's going to be a tremendous amount of distress coming up here, I'd imagine. And I think there is a shakeout where values are just going to have to get reset, either through workouts or foreclosure. And the shakeout or consolidation, I don't know that you're closing these things down, but there's certainly a consolidation in ownership. You'll start to see, large portfolios of select service hotels trade in the next 6 to 12 months. I mean, there's certainly some opportunity out there. So probably a little bit of consolidation of ownership and maybe some of these smaller hotels with the smaller flags along the highways. Sure, some of them, maybe there's some repositioning opportunities, into multi,
multi-family.
And traditionally maybe it would have gone into like a skilled nursing, but that's a tough one to call now too. That's a whole other podcast, what's going to happen with senior housing. So, but
So just as we talk about converting malls, dead malls that need to be converted, sometimes to senior housing, sometimes to satellite campuses for local colleges or what have you, we could actually be talking about what makes sense for a hotel if you just decide, let's change the property type.
Absolutely. I think there's going to be a lot of analyses going on. Yeah, around malls, there's a lot of highest and best use questions. Same thing's going to happen. There is currently, I mean, one of the reasons lenders can't do a deal right now, there's just a massive oversupply of rooms in the market. What should ADRs and occupancies look like now?
Average daily room rate you're talking about?
Right.
Okay.
It's just this massive oversupply. I mean, people aren't using them. Sure.
Is there an oversupply? You're saying right now there's an oversupply, but there wasn't before the pandemic, was there?
No, I mean...
We were doing good then. Okay.
It's market to market. There was a lot of support for hotels. I mean, from a behavioral standpoint, which is maybe another topic, you know, post-global financial crisis in 07, 08, 09, people decided to downsize their home. I'm kind of anecdotally referencing a lot of kind of credit card data that supported this, but behaviors shifted away from materialism over towards experiential spending. So people were downsizing their homes, grabbing apartments, lock up and go, less material goods, more spend on travel to see family, travel to, you know, get into tourism and have those create experiences, memories, go out to dinner. And I just, you know, which is what drove a lot of the expansion around hotels.
Not to mention the rising middle classes in Asia with money to travel. And Michael, you look at the hotel business and every indicator before this happened was exhilarating. It's like the world is getting richer and the nouveau riche want to travel. And they love coming to the United States as well as anywhere else. And then wham.
Wham.
Yeah, wham. Not to invoke the old band or George Michael or anything like that. But yeah, it's all of a sudden. But the long-term future for hotels, the long-term outlook should be positive, you would think, because of all the demographics that say hotels, the psychographics getting to what you were talking about, you know, people favoring experience over accumulation of material goods. And although some people are wealthy enough to just do both, let's back up to the current though, because I heard you mention select service hotels, and my understanding was that's the most durable category of hotels. For our listeners' sake, and to refresh my memory on this, what is the select service hotel, and is that the segment of the hotel business that you're expecting to do the best first?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to describe it. It is a very durable category. Select service literally means they don't offer many additional services. So, there won't be a hotel. There might just be a little snack shop there. I'm sorry, there won't be a restaurant. There won't be a bar, you know, very limited, as far as, extra services. There may not be a pool. You know, it's just going to be very basic. And the reason that, they will remain durable through a time like this is their overhead or their operating expenses are very low. And a lot of this stuff, sometimes a lot of the select service stuff is also long-term stay. You know, folks, it could be, you know, the consultants that are traveling all the time or, you know, for any reason, people will stay there for 5 to 7 or even multiple weeks. And a lot of times they offer weekly rates. And again, they clean your room once a week as opposed to every day. So the operating costs are much lower and they can carry those costs throughout these downtimes. And they should be able to come out the other end. And they're often owned, in large portfolios, which
creates those economies of scale that can, you know, the management can achieve more efficient operating expenses across the overall portfolio. So there, post global financial crisis, you saw a lot of these things get really pulled up in the big portfolios, and trade that way. And I expect to see that again. And that could even happen this year. And if it doesn't, because the market can't get comfortable with the value, it'll happen next year.
Well, let's talk about prop tech. You mentioned prop tech as in property technology, because one of the questions I want to ask you is how will hotels change or have to change to create a comfort level with their guests? Or do you see, you mentioned things like, you talk about this with office buildings too, making things as touchless as possible, obviously, is create, although this is an airborne, more and more what they're coming to the conclusion of is that it's not so much surfaces as it is airborne, but nonetheless, this is not the only thing people worry about. There's going to be future viruses and whatnot. So do you see some property technology or some new styles of hotel operation that, well, basically getting back to my basic question, how will they change?
You know, as little contact with staff and other visitors as possible for the time being. And I don't mean physical touch. I just mean space between you and other folks. I think that's really the only immediate way that we can reopen. I mean, long term, just structurally, there's not a lot you can do other than employ some of those prop tech methods. You know, and I just don't have a whole lot that I'm thinking about here, but, you know, virtual check-in and check-out and keyless entry, you know, maybe restaurants are operating a little bit more like that, where you're making orders at the table, you have less contact with staff. But I think that the demand will be more for those hotels that have more space, the rooms open to the outdoors. You know, I'm kind of grasping here, but I really think this trends more towards that Airbnb model. You know, a home that I can rent, drive up to, and I don't have to see or be in the same room as anybody but my family.
Well, you know, the thing is that you mentioned doors opening to the outside. We think of those as motels rather than hotels. Yeah. And those are places I never like to stay. I just feel that it's they tend not to be in the best parts of town and all that. But you're right in that, you know, automatically you're in the outdoors. But I never really feel overly crowded in a hotel corridor either. What about luxury hotels? Luxury hotels obviously don't open to the outdoors. They're contained. They've got great restaurants when they're done right and so on. Just to give you an idea, we do put on a lot of events. Our company puts on a lot of events. The entire second half of the year, all the events have been canceled. And we're not even sure the first, you know, couple months of next year are going to be doable. So there's all those room nights gone. There's all the spending on food and beverage gone. For the hotel business, and of course it's a hit to us as well, because that's part of how we do business. So it's just, and like you were saying, you're not planning on going to any business events anytime soon. These are, as you said, networking events, and it's the worst kind of contact. It's exactly what they tell you not to do. Don't be in enclosed areas in close proximity to one another, and certainly not without a mask. And that's really hard to network and with a mask on. I mean, it's just antithetical to what it's really all about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're going to be kind of, it looks like WebEx and Zoom are going to do very well for a while.
Yeah. I mean, there's one other interesting thing we were thinking about, you know, and this is kind of with regards to leisure and which probably, you know, encompasses that luxury market as well. If all international travel is shut down, you know, if the United States, due to the current kind of public health state of the U.S., is such that we're not allowed to travel outside of the U.S., that could support our hotel, you know, our domestic hotel market a little bit, because then folks are just going to have to do something here. The folks that have the risk tolerance to go out and stay somewhere, you know, and something that benefits the luxury hotels could just be that they're generally bigger and have more space. And, you know, maybe they can afford to employ some of those every other room or every other floor methods. So
well, that's a good point, how kind of being forced to travel domestically. And there's certainly we're a big country and there's plenty of things to see, plenty of places to go. So maybe it will internalize our travel all the more, being that, you know, Europe is shutting us out and other places really don't want Americans right now. I think Canada doesn't want us crossing the border either.
Right.
So that's not a good formula for economics overall, but for the hotel industry, it works beautifully.
I mean, yeah, anything to help. And I really do. I think it's anything to help up until the virus, you know, we've come up with a way to cope with it in a more long-term sense. We'll see general economic struggles and certainly significant to massive struggles in the hospitality space until there is some solution, some long-term solution.
Our guest has been Michael Beckman. He is managing director at Townhouse Partners. It's a due diligence firm that whose work is really focused on U.S. commercial real estate, the hotel industry as part of that. Michael, thank you for joining us. Keep tabs. We trust that you'll keep tabs on that hotel business and that maybe we can check in with you at a future date, hopefully with some great news to come. But I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate it. It's good to be on. Let's do it again soon.